Oh my God. So I bought, I had to get rid of, I have like a pet bed that I put in front of the wood stove, and it was originally for Taco, but then the cat took it, and some, but it was big enough that sometimes they could coexist on it and it was fine, but it was like getting pretty crappy and it was like, you can't really wash it. So I got a different one that was a little bit smaller, would fit better, and it had a removable cover and stuff. So I put it there and the cat immediately claimed it. And I was like, I mean, technically if they were willing to touch, you know, or be, you know, sort of close, they could both fit if they were just like friendly enough. But the cat's like flopped out. Dog comes up and tries to join her, and she just, without getting up, she just was like, like, it's literally a dog bed. Like, it's his bed.
Welcome to another episode of Pajiba, the Pajiba television podcast. I'm Pajiba comedy editor Dan Hamamura. With me, as always, are Pajiba managing editor Tori Preston.
Hello, Dan.
Hello, Tori. And Elongate Whisperer Dustin Rolls.
I like the addition. I'm trying to be timely, and that's the best I could come
up with. That was not my favorite addition, but it's fine.
Yeah, Kari Dustin. Lake Street Dive.
Did you listen to a little Lake Street Dive? That's, they're good. Yeah. They're good.
I like that. I really appreciate that you thought they were a very well-known band, but they were good.
I really did think that they were.
You really were like, everyone knows this band. They're no Guster.
Hey, Guster, don't get me started on Guster. Yeah, I know. The Guster kid went to preschool with my kids, so I knew the Guster guy.
Yeah,
the Guster guy's wife reads the site.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Does she listen to the podcast?
I hope not.
What are you talking about, Dustin? This is quality content.
She has a name, Dustin. You can't just diminish her to being Guster guy's wife. Somebody's gonna tell her.
Yeah.
Molly was we went to a birthday party, and she was just talking to Adam from Guster for like half an hour. I had no idea who he was, and they were talking about directions and lots of dumb bullshit. And then I was like, do you know who that was? And did I already tell this? Why are you laughing at me?
Turn the microphone towards your face.
Turn it around. Why is it backwards?
No. It was just you're. What is happening?
Wait, you want the there red light toward you?
No, you want the LED. You want to be like you. It should be right in front of you. You had it angled away from you. You were so close. Right. It was angled. You sound great now. Thank you.
All right. The point is, Molly talked to the guy for like 20 minutes, and then I'm like, do you know who that was? And she goes, no, he's a nice guy. He's a dad. And I was like, that's the guy from Guster. And she's like, no fucking way. So that's my Guster story.
And that's how Molly became a groupie?
Well, you know, yeah. Molly ended up becoming like a big part of the Jewish community, and he's a big part of the Jewish community. He has a separate band that's like a Jewish themed band. So it was like a really cool guy. Anyway,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Isn't it nice that we could hear that story clearly, Dustin?
That's right.
Oh, man.
Well, we're not a music podcast, but
he also owns a sustainable recording, like a recording studio that's like sustainable.
What is it, made out of like cardboard or something?
I don't know. What's sustainable? I have no idea.
Oh, is it? Oh, you know when they do like at the bars where they have the bike powered blender? Is it like that? But you have to like ride a bike to charge the amp?
Yes, exactly.
So that they can hear the music? I don't know.
Oh. My wife is texting me. It's called Reverb.
The studio or the source?
The studio.
Okay.
The studio, yeah.
I was going to say, I don't know if Reverb is in and of itself sustainable.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess.
Well, that's a good story. Let's move on now.
we tried, but you.
Now that I know that my wife is overhearing me, I'm very embarrassed.
You should ask for her direct opinions on the Guster guy.
Yes.
Anyway, well, we're not a music podcast. We will talk about TV at some point. Before we get to that, what's everyone drinking? Which I don't think we did last week, but that's fine because we had five people and it was chaos. Dustin, what, you have some kind of wine, it seems.
Oh yeah, I just wanted a Pinot. It's called Anycombe. I don't know what this is.
Anycombe.
Pronounce that. Anycombe.
Anycombe.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. It's a Pinot. I just picked out a Pinot.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Trader Joe's kind of wine?
No, I think I got it at Hannaford this week. Not an interesting story. Mm-mm.
So you have Pinot Grigio. Mm-hmm. I'm finishing off a bottle of Pinot Noir that I bought for a recipe.
I find that Pinot Noir is disgusting.
Yeah, well, you know, the recipe only called for half a bottle. And then I was like, I got this other half a bottle. So what do you do? It's not great. And it's not hot enough for me to add seltzer.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I could, but it's like you're not getting the like hot weather. Like, oh, I just want to be refreshed. So I feel like seltzer would make it better.
I had a quick question on the Fire Talk for you, Tori.
Oh, good. Yes.
Do you get the 14-inch or the 12-inch wood?
Wood. I think we get 16-inch.
16-inch. You have like a big... So we were always a 14-inch because that's what fits in our wood stove.
Yeah.
And then this year, because we went late, all they had left was 12-inch. And they charge it extra for the 12-inch, and they're smaller. It's minor, I guess, because you have to cut more. And they're really convenient.
And it's easier to carry, I imagine.
Easier to carry. You can put more in your wood stove, so it feels more satisfying, but I think it burns faster.
Well, yeah, it's just less. Yeah. No, I mean, our wood stove, I think we could fit, I think it holds up to like 18 to 20 inch, but like it's just not really a cut that you would have. No. So yeah, I think ours are between 14 and 16. Like,
holy shit, that's a big ass wood stove.
Yeah. But we only put one piece in at a time. So we don't want to like, cause it, when it gets going, it's like so hot. So I can't really like fill it. So it's like, you kind of like let it burn for a little while and like throw another one on. You're really doing one piece at a time. We just cannot stand having like.
I put like four or five in a time and mostly just so it'll run long enough so I can sleep for a few hours before I can have to come back.
Given up on sleep. We just, it just goes out overnight and we get up in the morning and start it again.
Yeah.
And we just set the furnace for like, yeah.
You're on the
schedule
wheel.
Now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good. If you can do it, it's good.
I can do it. It's exhausting. I don't set an alarm or anything. I just wake up in the middle of the night. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go do it. And then
you will have succeeded when you get to the point where your waking up is basically sleepwalking.
Yes.
And so you're not really awake. You just do it automatically.
You're sleepwalking to put wood in a burning furnace.
It's completely safe.
Yes.
And you choose to live in these locations where it's this cold.
It's a luxury. Yes. I don't know. It's like the warmth, it sinks into your bones, Dan. It's just, you know, not all of us grew up in Hawaii.
Right.
Where it's beautiful and warm.
Yeah.
What's weird, it's like at 3 a.m. It's not warm. You've got a few embers going in the stove, so it's not even, you're just like keeping it to keep going because it's not heating your house because there's just like some, like a few
you're
embers.
You're trying to get it long enough to like, you want embers in the morning so you can get it really going again. Right. Yeah.
So the heat will kick on overnight.
Yeah.
At some point.
That's what, so we lucked out. So our stove is made with soapstone. So that continues radiating heat after the fire's gone out. Mm-hmm. So that, I mean, like our furnace will still kick on around like 4 or 5 in the morning, whatever. But it means that like, while we won't have the embers to restart, at least the stove itself is still putting out heat overnight after the fire's gone out. So
when you have the embers, do you just like, you open up the little thing at the bottom and then put the wood in and it just like.
Yeah, it usually, if the embers are strong enough, it usually picks up pretty quickly. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And that was Wood Talk. I'm sorry, Dan. What were you drinking tonight?
Yeah.
I'm drinking a, it's Orion, which is Okinawan beer, but they have some kind of special pilsner that's in a fancier can and was more expensive. So.
Oh, a nice can.
Oh, here. 75 beer reflects the unique combination of the devotion to beverage quality and craftsmanship of Japanese beverage masters and the sun-ripened natural ingredients of the southern island of Okinawa.
Okay, I'm really glad that that's what that is, because I saw you drink the can, and at first I thought it was like, I was like, Mike's Hard Lemonade comes out with like a can now? It's not just a bottle? Like, I definitely thought it was some weird hard lemonade. I was like, that doesn't seem like Dan.
It does look like a weird, yeah.
It's just very, flavored. It's a colorful can.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, it's fine. It's nice. Probably not worth what I paid for it, but that's okay. It's that's the.
Do you taste the difference? Does it taste special?
It's different. I mean, it's definitely made from, because their regular beer is like rice, and I think this is wheat.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, it tastes different, but it's I don't know. It's still like none of their beers are super heavy, so it's just a nice beer that's not too, you know.
It's pleasant.
Yeah, it's pleasant. Wait, Tori, did nothing. We ask what you're drinking?
Yeah, I'm just having some Pinot Noir.
I missed it.
Some lackluster.
I missed it in the middle of Wood Talk.
It was before Wood Talk, Dan. You were just completely...
I got real...
Wood just Talk just blacked wipes out. Everything else out.
Wait, so in Wood Talk... wait, when you... I know you just closed Wood Talk, but I'm reopening it. So you
it's
have
got to be the least interesting topic ever for a television podcast.
You have
14 or 12 inch wood.
Well, no, I don't need to know any of that. I don't even know the technical stuff. But there's real. So you have a wood burning stove, but you also have a furnace.
Yes,
those are separate. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
they're and separate. The furnace but is you
gas.
Yeah,
ours
propane.
Is.
Yeah,
okay. Ours is gas,
and
but they're very expensive.
That's why you burn
fuel
the wood.
Is yeah.
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 Okay.
Although wood this year is also very expensive.
It is. Yeah.
But nothing compared to gas or propane or whatever. Yeah.
Right. So I think we're paying. I think the wood is like it's over $300 a cord now.
Yeah.
But you can do the winter for like three and a half cords. But your like gas bill, if you run the furnace, is like $750 a month.
Right.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, our house is smaller. You have your house is like big and also like lots of rooms that, so right. I imagine heating is like a little bit more of a challenge, but yeah, like for us, the heat bill would probably be like $400 or $500 a month if we were trying to do it just fully that.
Right. So the wood okay. probably cuts that and like makes that like a little more than a third probably.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, the wood is just more pleasant.
Mm-hmm. Until about February, you're just like, God damn it. Do I have to put more wood in this fucking stove?
Well, our problem is like all of our wood piles are like kind of out there. And like in the beginning of winter, it's fine. There's not that much snow on the ground. But as the winter goes on and the snow gets deeper, but then also the snow that falls off of the roof lands in this giant mound behind our house, like out our back door. So it gets more and more treacherous. By about like January, February, March, you're climbing up this ice hill off of the back porch to then go like slide back down it to get to the wood pile and bring it back to the porch.
Oh, Jesus.
This thing is literally, it's like our porch level, like the back deck is like a little bit elevated. And then there's the edge of the house and the snow falls off the roof right in front of it. And that will get up to like 4 feet above the deck level. So you're literally just climbing up an ice hill to get out of the house.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So luckily we have like one of those wood holders. So you can put quite a bit of wood on the back porch. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, it gets you by for a couple of days. You don't have to go out and get wood every single day. But like, yeah. And then because then once it starts melting and refreezing, it gets like packed and icier. And so you're just sort of sliding.
Well, we keep all of our wood in the garage, but like you still have to bring it in the house. And when you bring it in the house, what do you bring it in and where do you put it?
Yeah. Well, you have a wheelbarrow.
Yeah, we do. We bring it in with the wheelbarrow, and we just kind of leave the wheelbarrow there. Unless people come over, then we'll put the wheelbarrow out.
You just got to get a decorative wheelbarrow. Get in the antique. Get a whole.
That just sounds like part of the charm.
Yeah, get what is it, red flyer or whatever? Get like a kid's wagon.
Oh,
and then it's just like, oh, it's just like scenic. It's just
yeah.
Oh, we do have a kid's wagon. We should use that.
Put a little bow on it or something.
All right.
Wood talk.
Well, that's my
extended
fault
wood talk
for reopening wood talk. But we've still got lots
people
of
people hitting fast forward 15 seconds. 15
some
seconds.
People,
15
some
seconds.
People really enjoy the stuff that's not TV, Dustin.
I hear that, but I don't know that wood talk
is what they're
enjoy.
Looking for.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. We should do a poll.
There's some New Englanders that maybe appreciate it.
Are you looking for wood talk or water talk? Which way of us wasting time do you guys appreciate the most? I think we need to go back to doing Trader Joe's reviews.
Oh, yeah. We haven't done
we haven't talked about groceries in a while.
I got their Brussels sprouts this week. They're like little Parmesan.
Oh, like the bag?
Yeah, not
fine.
Good.
Fine.
Yeah.
Not, I don't know.
I'm not as adventurous with my Trader Joe's as you guys are. I don't try all the wild stuff.
Oh, you got to.
I mean, I get a lot of stuff there, but I don't really get the adventurous stuff. Although the Zug is fantastic, but my wife makes better Zug.
Yeah. I mean, if you know what you're doing, I'm sure like homemade of any of them would be better,
right.
But like
yeah.
I wouldn't be able to pull that off.
Also, Zug is fun to say.
It is.
I don't know what Zug is.
It's like this.
It's like a sauce. It's like a
dip sort of,
yeah.
Like a green, spicy, Middle Eastern dip.
Yeah, what is the primary?
I want to say cilantro.
Yeah, I was like, it's cilantro, parsley. I think green. I mean, yeah. I don't know.
Oh,
I don't really know
okay.
either.
I see. I have had this before. I didn't know the name.
But Molly made it a couple of weeks ago, and it was amazing.
And now you don't need Trader Joe's.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love their savory popcorn. They have a savory herb popcorn that.
Oh, we do. We have that a lot. Yeah, that is really good.
I can just, it's just like handfuls. I've scaled back, but there was at one point I was buying like 3 bags a week and like my husband does not eat it. It was just so I could always have some to snack on.
Tori, do you eat that popcorn while watching Kung Fu?
I do.
Oh.
I do. That is a hell of a segue. To be fair, if I eat anything while watching Kung Fu, everything, I might even say.
That makes sense. It's time for Tori's Kung Fu Corner, where Tori tells us what happened on Kung Fu, a show on the CW, which I've never seen.
Right.
And so, Tori, please take it away.
Well, Dan, you will be shocked to learn that bad guy Bo is continuing to be. So now that we know he's evil, he's like extra evil. He's like, it's really upsetting because I was really kind of rooting for him. And now I'm like, oh. And what's nice is that Henry's very suspicious of him. But it's going to walk that line of like, is it just jealousy or does he actually like have some sort of bad guy radar going off? But anyway, so this week's episode, they are trying to get the alchemist spirit out of Pei Ling. And they come up with a whole plan because they got the sword, one of the two swords from the harvester. And it's a sword that like basically like actually does the harvesting of the souls. It like reaps the soul. So they're like, okay, cool. We can use this sword to get the soul out of Pei Ling. But it turns into this whole like the thing scenario where they like they're starting the process, but then the power goes out because Nikki invited Bo along to help, and he is the harvester, so he needed to sabotage the whole operation from the inside to make it like go wonky. So then Pei Ling's spirit just like comes out of the alchemist spirit comes out of Pei Ling, and then they don't know which body it went into, so they have to like figure it out, and it turns out it went into Sebastian.
Oh.
And that was super sad. So
Sebastian was like a bad guy for a little
bit. Yeah. He was a really effective kind of bad fun. Guy. Yeah, it was really fun. And then he felt really bad about it.
I think it's like foreshadowing for what's to come.
No, it's not. Because you saw how bad he felt about it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
It's all an act.
Oh, my God. It's – ugh. Anyway. So they think in the end that they charge up the sword and reap the soul as it comes out of Sebastian to go back into Paling, and they think they've captured it, except that some of it, I guess, really did get into Paling, because at the end of the episode, in the big shocking twist, she tries to stab Nikki's mom, and then there's a big fight and Nikki can't hurt her, so then she runs off into the night. So that doesn't bode well. Jalan has been brought out of the wasteland. So, and she reunited with Paling. So that's great. Nikki's mom is super depressed because she's still not over Sebastian leaving the restaurant. So she's not going back to the restaurant. And meanwhile, Sheriff Jody is trying to monetize her into this frozen dumpling empire, which is kind of great. I'm actually super into it and I would eat them. They would do well at Trader Joe's.
Right.
And Jin is now proceeding forth with his political career. He's going to do really well. But I have to say, one of my low-key favorite things, and it's a pairing, I really like the pairing of Althea and Derek.
I think his name's Evan, is my understanding.
I don't know.
Maybe okay, Devin. Maybe
you think Jen and Derek will maybe sleep together.
What?
This show just doesn't do that soap opera fun stuff. I don't
Jen?
Understand.
Did you say Jen?
Jen?
No, I meant Althea and and Derek.
Yeah, I don't know. They won't because he's too nice a guy, and he's got his girlfriend and Althea's. But I really I think platonically the pairing of them and their little adventures of legal and investigating is great. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that that's a kind of fresh dynamic that I'm really enjoying this season, almost as much as I was enjoying hot Bo until he turned out to be evil. So
the harvester of
now
souls.
I have a question. Yes. Does that make him hotter, or are you just no?
He's still pretty hot. He's still really hot. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of annoyed. I don't know.
Is it really just that Dustin was right? Is that why?
I mean, that really hurts.
Yeah.
Actually, that does really, really hurt.
I get that.
And part of it was that it was kind of, I didn't expect to enjoy being annoyed at Henry because I was such a fan of Henry for so long. And so it actually was kind of fun this season being oh yeah, you actually did kind of screw up. And she deserves this hot new stranger who she totally doesn't know and is getting into bed with way too quickly. And then and it's just because it feels like it's my fun that's being ruined.
Got it.
But Henry is still a very nice guy and I'm glad that they're going to end up together.
Mm-hmm.
Although if Jalan keeps showing up to research with him, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
There could be some, that could be an interesting little wrinkle.
We'd like to see some drama there in these relationships, some bad feelings, some toxic relationship drama.
I mean, Shifu just tried to stab her mother.
Okay,
I feel there is drama.
I want some cheating scandals.
Yeah, we haven't had any cheating.
You want soap opera.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are, again, with the spirit thing, it's kind of passions. We're getting some, there's some opera action, but it's not the, we need surprise twins. We need people to have amnesia.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anyone knows anyone working on the show can put in a word.
I don't, yeah.
Yeah, so.
That would be, if I remember correctly, you did mention that Pei Ling had amnesia, so. They had at the beginning of the season, so
yeah.
There's
but
a
she just
bit of
didn't
that.
Know what she
From
did.
Your
when she
recollection,
got...
yeah.
Hmm.
Look, I'm just going off these recaps because, as you know, I've never seen the show, and I cannot, So I'm just going off of what I've been told.
I think Henry and Bo should hook up.
I'm down with that.
That would be a stunning turn of events.
It would be, right? The compass and the harvester. And then they can have like a whole spinoff. Anyway. That's Kung Fu.
All right. That was Kung Fu Corner. Thanks, Tori.
Yeah.
I don't have a good transition, but it's
What show, all right, has reached the end of its drama? Always had way too much drama, but not nearly enough, surprise twins. It's The Walking Dead.
Walking Dead is over. 177 episodes.
Is it really over, though, if it's got 11 spinoffs? Season.
No, it's not. Because it's like the same characters doing spinoffs. But the show itself, I guess, is over.
Well, they get to reset the episode count and not pay the writers 11th season salaries.
Exactly. It was a good finale. I'll give it that. It was solid.
Rick showed up.
Rick did show up. He basically, when he ended, he like got picked up by a helicopter, and nonsensically in this episode, he gets picked up by a helicopter. You're like, what is he? They're like, I guess he ran away and another helicopter tracked him down and picked him back up, and he's like smiling about it. He's like, back to the old salt mines. I don't know what was going on.
And it's not the same helicopter.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's the same outfit.
Or maybe he's just hanging out with helicopter people.
Well, the helicopter people were explored a little bit in the World Beyond, that really shitty spinoff. So we know who the helicopter people are.
Who are they? Are they just helicopter people? Is that their only defining characteristic?
No, but I'm not about to go down that road and try to explain to you that whole thing. But it's a whole different thing.
How do they refine
fuel? It doesn't.
I mean, if you don't explain it to me, I'm only going to assume that they are purely out in the world to collect and use helicopters.
What doesn't make sense is like the Daryl at the end of the show left to look for Rick and Michonne because he found out that they're still alive. And his show was set in Europe. So Rick and Michonne clearly are in Europe.
Right.
But how either one of them got there, who knows?
Because did Michonne leave to find Rick?
Yes.
Okay.
Also, helicopters don't cross the Atlantic.
On boats, they do. That's what a carrier. You can have it on a carrier.
Well, sure, but it's the apocalypse. I don't know that they have a lot of carriers.
This could be how it crosses over with the hit TNT series, The Last Ship, which was McSteamy commanding a destroyer or something.
World's End or whatever the other one? Wasn't there a whole storyline where they were on a ship or a submarine?
No, it was Fear the Walking Dead. They weren't. They were living in a submarine that had in Texas that was like ashore.
Oh, okay. It was decommissioned. It was beached.
Right. It was like a nuclear submarine where they shot bombs. Anyway, I don't know how they're going to get to Europe, but they are. I don't know how Michonne's going to get to Europe. I don't know how Daryl's going to get to Europe, but Rick is apparently in Europe. It doesn't really matter. And Maggie and Negan are going to be in New York for their spinoff. They didn't tease. I mean, they sort of said, we need to talk about the future, Maggie said to Daryl, but we don't really know what that spinoff is about.
Okay. But Michonne is already in Europe, right?
She was in the finale, but there was no scene set in Europe that I could
that
tell.
Scene was still in America somewhere.
I think so, because it was very similar to her final scenes the last time we saw her.
Okay. Oh.
And
didn't you say that Rick and Michonne had a kid that Judith was talking to?
TJ, yeah.
Like RJ, actually their RJ. Their child? They had a child?
Yes.
I had no idea.
Yes, yes.
Wow. Okay.
Was that child born before Rick disappeared?
Yeah, did he abandon two children?
I want to say that she was pregnant and when he left. And then there was a big time jump. I don't think he knew.
Okay. So he only abandoned one child.
Right. Which wasn't technically, I mean, it was Shane and Lori's kid.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
everybody forgets that, but in the, you know.
I mean, it's not about blood. It's about who raised you. Like, you know. Like, don't quit trying to let him off the hook.
How many seasons could you have skipped and the finale would still be affecting?
Like, so Rosita died, and you remember Rosita, right? Because she came in like the third wave of characters with.
I think she was there when, because I stopped watching when Glenn died, which is when a lot of people.
Yeah, Rosita was there. She came in with Eugene and the guy who died with Glenn, who I loved, and like Michael, the guy from Southland.
Yeah, yeah.
So Rosita was like maybe the, besides Eugene, the longest running character that doesn't have her own spinoff already set up. She's a good enough actress that it worked, even though she hasn't really been a big part of the show the last few years. She's been a big part enough. So it was affecting when she died.
Okay.
In part because it took 2 days and you're like, oh, you're just going to drag this out and make us sad, aren't you? Which is what they tried to do with Carl, and nobody was like, oh, just die, Carl. Come
nobody
on.
Nobody was sad.
Why are you taking so long?
I also liked reading your recap because there are certain things where you're like, and of course the show is at like doing this and this and this. And I'm like, I hadn't seen the show for so long that when you said like, and they're, you know, fighting against the governor, and I'm thinking of like.
Different governor, yeah.
The other governor. I'm like, oh, they keep. Like, come up with different job names.
Exactly. And this governor happened to be like a bland version of the other governor. Yeah. This governor wasn't psychotic and didn't have like zombie heads and
fish tanks. At least the other governor was like interesting, and it was a nice counterpoint to Negan. Like it was an like
yes.
There was a while where they felt like they were really escalating. Mm-hmm. It feels like at a certain point they just stopped doing that.
Well, I think once they hit the Whispers, there was just nowhere else to go. You have like a cult that wears zombie skin as their own mask.
I mean, there's always someplace worse to go.
I'm sure.
Ezekiel, in your recap, you said that Ezekiel becomes governor.
Yeah, he becomes the new governor of the Commonwealth.
Ezekiel's the guy who had the tiger.
Yes, and spoke in like weird
biblical. Middle,
right. Yes.
Right. Okay.
But he doesn't anymore. So a good ending for Ezekiel. You don't really notice until the end how few of the characters actually did survive, because you're like, oh, yeah. Like the characters you really care about either have died or are missing, and we'll see them later.
Yeah.
Abraham, that was his name. I loved Abraham.
What about
wait, was he the one who showed up on Westworld?
I don't think he was on Westworld.
I'm trying to remember.
I don't know. Yeah. What about the guy who left the main show to go be on Fear, The Walking Dead?
Morgan.
Is that Morgan?
So, yes. Yeah, Morgan. Lenny James, who is like a phenomenal actor. And like, I don't know why he went to the Fear, The Walking Dead. He's like the lead of that show now, but it's a terrible show. And he's so much better than any of the, he's like a Shakespearean
British. And that show's still going?
It is. Yeah. And it hasn't been, they haven't announced an end. I think the next season might be the end. What did I say was the mantra they were repeating?
Oh, like you're still alive or something?
We are the living. Yeah. Something like that. So they have this whole montage where like various characters from the present and past of The Walking Dead are like, we are the living. And then Lenny James shows up and says, we are the living. And that was like the really like the most affecting moment of that whole montage. Like, oh, Lenny James, even though he's still in a show that, but he's like like one of the best people in this whole franchise.
I mean, he still was in, I think, my favorite episode of the series. I mean, I haven't seen, you know, since season 7, but
I know what episode you're talking about.
The one where they end up in the town and he's set up all the booby traps. And it's like three people. It's like him, Michonne, and Rick.
Yep.
I think. And Carl? Carl might have been there.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sober, I could tell you the name of the episode, but I can't right now. But it's a really good episode.
I think I saw that episode. I remember that.
Back when Walking Dead was great.
I used to watch that show every week.
It was so good. Did you also quit it, Glenn?
Roughly, yeah.
Yeah, that's when everybody seemed to quit.
I did come back just to see Andrew Lincoln's final episode, but which was not his final episode. But
no, but it was a good episode.
I'd missed stuff, but I could enjoy the episode without it.
He was just never my favorite part of the show, so he was not what I would come back for.
He wasn't my favorite part of the show until he left, and then you realized how good he was.
Yeah.
He kept that show together.
There is a part of me that still is surprised how good, like, how important, like, how much Jon Bernthal did in the first season. Holy like, there was shit, a part yes. of me that, like, when he got, it was like, I kind of was like, maybe this show will just never be the same. And it was interesting. For a while, every season had those moments where you're like, oh, no, this is the thing that the show will never recover from. Mm-hmm. And then it just kept being fine.
It did. And I think it could have – it survived Rick for a good half season.
Which was respectable.
Yeah. And it wasn't even the absence of Rick. It was just – it got stuck in – the source material was not good after – at a certain point. And I think Rick was smart, or Andrew Lincoln was smart to get out, because he knew what was coming. And it was like the Kirkman source material was not good in the last arc.
Yeah.
After the Whispers left, it was just crap.
Yeah. So he was like, I don't want to do crap.
Exactly. Also, I want to go home and be with my family.
Which is fair. Mm-hmm. And his episode of Cabinet of Curiosities, he was wonderful in it.
Oh, so he's got an episode? I do. I really do like him.
So the last episode of Cabinet of Curiosities, he's in it. It's basically a two-person episode, and it's kind of a haunted house on an island, kind of. But it's like a beautiful. It is an absolutely wonderful episode. It's not as much scary as it is like genuinely emotional about like this marriage. And he's the husband who's like struggling to reconnect with his wife after their child died. And she's trying to throw herself into work, but then she starts seeing these ghosts and he doesn't quite understand. And they're supposed to be on this island researching like murmurations of birds. It's fantastic, but he's so charming in it. He's like, he's great.
Yeah. I think when Rick and Michonne were on The Walking Dead, no matter how bad it got, it still felt like sort of a prestige zombie show. Yeah. Once they left, then it felt like sort of a B movie, TNT kind of thing. And I mean, Jeffrey Dean Morgan did as best he could to carry it, but there's only so much you can do. And he was great and continued to be great. And he had like the best scene in the finale, but
right.
I'm excited to see him and Maggie do their spinoff anyway.
Mm-hmm. You're going to watch all the spinoffs.
Every goddamn one of them, and recap them.
So The Walking Dead is dead. Long live The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Right. And if The Walking Dead had done, if in the last two or three seasons had introduced like really interesting characters, it could have continued, but it just didn't. It just kept riding the same characters that had been around forever and refused to kill. I don't want to get a soapbox, so let's move on to.
Well, I also wonder how much of those last couple seasons where they knew they were going to do the spinoffs, so they were kind of like, were they trying to hold some cards to their chests to do the spinoffs and that kind of like.
I don't think they knew they were going to do the spinoffs until
the last season.
The actors didn't even know it was going to be the last season until AMC announced it. They were
They announced
they'd done the Andrew Lincoln movie thing, right?
They had announced that
was in the ninth season. They had announced that.
And they had announced, I thought they had announced that the spinoff was going to be, what's his name? Norman Reedus
and Carol. And
Carol. Yeah.
And then I think Carol was like, I'm tired. I don't want to go to Europe. Mm-hmm. And I just don't want to do that right now.
But even that was announced a while ago, right?
Yes.
I mean, before they had said, at least officially, that this was the final season.
No. Because when they announced the final season was fully 2 years ago.
Was it really?
Because they did 30 episodes since they announced the final season.
Hmm. Yeah.
They announced the final season. They tacked 6 episodes on to the end of the 10th season. And then they came back and did 24 episodes over a year.
Spread out. Yeah. Like in chunks.
Jesus. They kind of, yeah.
They could have made it 12 seasons.
Right.
Well, you know what,
they were trying to do what they did with Saul and Mad Men and Breaking Bad, where they just, you know, break up the final season in order to save money, I guess.
Well, Dustin, you know what show is not going to do that to you?
The Winter Sun?
Right. Well, wasn't that Kent? No. Fleischman is in Trouble.
Oh, God.
The limited series on FX.
FX.
Is it on FX? Is it? But it's only on
Hulu. Is it FX?
It's also on FX? We're not going to get an
FX series.
We're never going to know.
Anyway.
I don't know if it's actually on FX.
Look, we all watch
it
on Hulu, clearly.
Yes, yes.
Wait, Tori, did you watch? I forgot.
I did not watch it.
Okay.
I did read the review and was really interested, and now I might watch it.
I think I oversold it to people who look, it's just this is like my wheelhouse. This is
right.
This is everything to me. This is like my favorite kind of.
You just like unhappy people.
Yeah.
I like marriage, adultery, relationships, that all of that sort of thing.
This very much feels like it would have been an indie movie. Like or like a indie or like mid budget adult indie or adult.
But is that just because Jesse Eisenberg's in it? He's in it.
No,
right?
Even yes, I mean is. it's
makes
the directors
seem like an indie.
But it's also like the directors or the married couple that did like Little Miss Sunshine and so indie, it's even like their like aesthetic,
their pedigree, everything.
Yeah, kind of like leans into that.
I never pictured Eisenberg, but when I read the book, I pictured Catherine Hahn in the Claire Danes role, which made it feel all the more sort of independent. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, I haven't read the book, so I don't know.
I think having read the book makes it a lot more interesting because people who watch those first two episodes do not understand that it's going to flip.
Yeah. They don't know what's coming.
Right.
So it probably seems very standard.
And I think it's important to know what's coming because the Jesse Eisenberg stuff, he's just an asshole, like a sex-obsessed, narcissistic asshole. And I imagine a lot of people are not that interested in that, but you need that context to sort of appreciate what comes next.
I'm assuming, is it that it's Claire Danes' point of view?
Yes. The last it's broken in half. So it's like half his perspective and then half her perspective. And his perspective, you're like, you understand and appreciate these, he's sort of like this sex-obsessed narcissist, but you don't dislike him, but he does make you sort of dislike the Claire Danes character.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Just from his perspective, you're like, oh, she abandoned the family and because the Lizzie Kaplan character thinks that Claire Danes' character is like a bitch, you're like, well, then she must be because Lizzie Kaplan's amazing.
Right. You know? Yeah. And she's kind of our, at least, I only watched the first one. The first two episodes are out.
Oh, yeah,
But she's also, Lizzie Kaplan's character is also the narrator. So it feels very much from her point of view.
Right.
And she's obviously on his side.
Right. And that influences it a lot. So that when the second half comes, it's like, oh. And it's just like you have a completely different perspective and it makes you see him in a completely different way that I think is just really, really fascinating.
But when that twist comes, like for the second half, I know the episodes haven't come out yet, have they?
No. And I only know this from the book.
But from the book, like, would the Lizzie Kaplan character remain as the POV character? Like, is it that she gains more knowledge of their dynamic? It's not like suddenly the narrator shifts to be Claire Danes.
No, it doesn't shift. She doesn't become the narrator, but it's from her perspective. But I think that Lizzie Kaplan remains the narrator.
Yeah. Because, I mean, that's what interested me about it, because there's always that thing of, like, the person who's on the outside of a relationship and the bias just coming from whose side you're more familiar with.
Right.
You know, and so, but it's always that ridiculous thing of, like, you shouldn't pick sides because you will never know what's actually happening between two married people. Like, that's just impossible.
I did enjoy very much that it's the entire show is just populated with actors that, like, you either love from something else or even when they're not as famous, you're like, oh, I've seen that person in like 30 things.
Yes.
And I just know that face and that voice. Josh Radnor, disappointing.
Radnor. Bearded Radnor.
Yeah.
Bearded Radnor, who looks, he looks exactly like, he looks like bearded guy from the Todd show. You know what I'm talking about? From
David Cross?
No, the Zoe singing show.
Oh.
Aston?
Skylar Aston.
So Skylar Aston and Josh Radnor, when they both have beards, look exactly alike.
No.
Trust me.
Unlikely. I don't think that's right.
Look at them both with beards.
I'm picturing them both right now in my brain, and I can tell them apart, Dustin.
No. Watch the Todd show and then watch Fleischman and then this. It's like the same guy.
Oh, you're talking about the new Todd show.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not the old.
What is it? Better Off Todd Crosby. Or
So Help Me Todd?
So Help Me Todd. Yeah.
So Help Me Todd.
No, Dustin, I think you're wrong. And I think it's insensitive of you to conflate the two.
What?
Skylar Astin sings and dances, and Josh Radnor makes indie movies, and has managed to be not Zach Braff.
Oh.
He was on the Zach Braff trajectory of like long running sitcom, making indie movies,
and then
he's kind of escaped it a little bit.
Yeah.
There's still time.
I liked Happy Thank You More, Please. So
did you?
Yeah.
It was charming. I know. I like their shitty indie movies. That's who I am.
Everyone just needs to get over the fact that, like, we all liked Garden State at the time, okay?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
We all learned our lesson.
Right.
Like,
but at the time, like, everyone loves to hate on it now, but at the time, we all enjoyed it. We all had a good time. We can accept that while also understanding, like, that was then.
Yes.
Dustin.
2004.
It was a different era.
So much The Shins.
I love The Shins.
And the whole Postal soundtrack.
Service.
Oh, my God.
So good.
Anyway, not a movie podcast, but Fleischman Is in Trouble feels to me like a TV version of, like in that vein of, you know, New York fancy people.
The mayor's story, that sort of thing, sort of a Woody Allen-esque sort of thing.
Right.
It's good. It's really, really good. And I think that people who hate the first two and probably four episodes will like the back four even more, which is like, it's hard to sell people on that. He's like, just wait. These shitty episodes with the shitty character is important. It's not shitty episodes, but the shitty character, it's important to understand.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right, Penny, shut the fuck up. All right.
I think Penny wants us to get to 1899.
I don't want to miss 1899, so talk about something else while I let this fucking dog out.
Well, all right. Well, we've got 11 minutes left. And
this is the thing I needed to get Dustin because I need to write the review with him.
Yeah, and that's probably not enough time for the two of you to talk about 1899, but...
No, that's okay. He'll have to talk to me about it when he's sober.
Yeah, there you go.
He could have gotten this over with while he was drunk, but no.
I watched one episode, and I feel pretty good about my understanding of what's
going on. Yeah, I think you've got it. Yeah. I mean, it's a really simple show.
There's a ship. There's a bunch of people... They all have their secrets.
Yep.
It's like lost on a ship in the turn of the century.
Yeah. Do you want me to spoil the end, or are you going to keep watching?
I mean, I might keep watching, but I'm also not like I'm actually. I will say this: like, even knowing that they're setting up a full on mystery of like twists and turns and stuff, I was actually enjoying the characters enough that yes. I don't feel compelled. Like, oh my God, if I know the ending, it's going to ruin it for me.
It won't. Because honestly, the ending comes out of nowhere. And it is a character study for most of the...
Yeah.
Most of it is like there's confusion and mystery. But like mm-hmm. it's all very much driven by this right. kind of like multicultural cast that like right. none of them can really speak to each other. And they're all on this boat.
Yeah. And they all have their own reasons for why they're on the boat, which I'm sure we'll get into over the course.
But it becomes illuminated. You get kind of flashbacks. You start learning about individual characters, why they're there, what thing. And they all have some like event in their past that they're running from kind of some tragedy. Not unlike Lost. And it is. So the beginning is very does have a serious Lost vibe. You know, it's set except that it is set in 1899.
Right.
And the main thing, but it also has a sort of it was funny because when I watched it, I was like, that's a very traditional spaceship sci-fi setup, yeah. which is, you know, you're on a ship and you get a distress beacon or you get, you know, a beacon from a previous mission, a lost ship, mm-hmm. and you go to investigate. And then I was like, well, you know, maybe they're stealing it from maritime fiction that I'm just unaware of because I don't read a lot of boat books, you know, but I'm thinking like, oh, well, that's, you know, it's Event Horizon or it's Sunshine or it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's any number of these kind of like sci-fi things. But it's right. kind of cool that it's just set back in, you know, on a steamboat.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, they go to investigate the ship that had previously made the journey 4 months before and had gotten lost. And they find that there are no passengers, and then they kind of get trapped or lost or, you know, struggle to get away. And mysterious things start happening on their boat, and they're trying to figure out what's going on. So that is the bulk of the season. And yeah, the characters are – one of the big things about it is that the characters come – there are like 6 or 7 languages spoken on the boat. A few characters are bilingual, but a lot of them aren't. So you end up with a lot of scenes between two characters who are speaking to each other but can't understand each other. Mm-hmm. And it leads to some really kind of beautiful moments because it's about like the characters themselves know that like what they're saying the other person doesn't get, but they're still trying to make the connection. And there's never like this idea, you know, you never see them kind of struggling and be like, what? Why are you, you know, like it's just right. kind of accepting people as they are and finding that they're are a lot of ways, a lot of things that they understand without words. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they're trying to get to the bottom of these mysteries and really can't communicate to each other.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, so that carries it for a long time. And then there's a big twist.
Well, I guess.
So the big twist in the end, which is setting up a season 2. Is that actually it is a space sci-fi show. They are in the year 2099, and it is a simulation that is running to test. It has something to do with human, so the question of reality. The main character, Mora, who's played by Emily, was it Beecham? Beechman?
From
Into the Badlands.
Into the Badlands, yeah.
Oh.
So she's the main character, and her whole thing is she studies the brain like her. She's a doctor in a time where there weren't a lot of women doctors, but she was very much interested in kind of perception and memory and stuff like that. And the season is kind of unraveling the fact that this has all been her experiment the whole time. And she herself doesn't remember it. So you're still trying to figure out like why, A guy shows up and says he's her husband. Like, okay, there's a kid. It turns out it's her son. But then you still don't know how much of that is true either. Like, you get to the end and you can accept what you've been told. But there's the possibility that that is another lie, or that is another layer of deception in the simulation. You don't really know. But it's kind of testing, like, what is our reality? Is it purely what we are, what we experience, purely the memories we have, purely kind of what's in front of us, or is reality? So does reality exist in our mind, or is reality objective? Mm-hmm. And does it matter? So this is kind of like, you know, can you take these people and it, what's interesting is there's one part that like her father reveals, which is like how she, when she was a child, she got interested in this. And he's like, by the way, her father is played by Anton Lesser, who is also currently, like, he was Qyburn on Game of Thrones, but he's also right now on Andor.
Yeah.
As one of the ISB guys, right? So he's great. He's in the show as this like creepy guy that you think is behind everything, and he's not. He's trapped in the simulation along with her. And he's explaining to someone that when she was a kid, she went into his office and found like Plato's Republic and read the allegory of the cave. And he's like, but she just misunderstood it. And that's the allegory that's all about, you know, what if humanity is just slaves chained to a wall, watching the shadows flicker. And that, so what they perceive is what they think that reality is, because that's all they know. And they don't know anything outside of their perception. And so she takes that as, you know, okay, well, reality is in your mind. And so this sets her off on her entire life's work. And yeah, that is actually sort of a misinterpretation of the allegory. I mean, there's a lot of arguments about what it means, but that's not certainly the only interpretation, and that's not the end of what that allegory is. So I like that it's kind of taking a very, you know, classic intellectual thing and being like, yeah, this character just got it wrong. But I think it's, you know, I think it sets up one thing I'm interested in for the next season is like, we've gotten to know all these characters and all of those mysteries and backstories for them. They're on the ship with her as well. And so we don't know how they ended up in the simulation with her and how much of what we saw of their stories is real. Like, obviously those things that they were running from, those mysteries in their past that are set in the past are not feasible, but what are, maybe there are kernels of truth in there. Like, if they're running from somebody that they had murdered, it may not be that scenario, but maybe they really did kill someone, you know?
Right.
So those characters, I think, will still be important, but I think it's going to be interesting to see how those relationships and dynamics and what we know about them, how much of it holds true in reality versus, you know, what we've come to know.
Right.
So
I think that was a very generous reading of the series.
And now Dustin's counterpoint.
No, I'm not going to. It's like Manifest crossed with Westworld.
It's very Westworld.
Yeah, but like, it's basically the story where you wake up in the end and it was all a dream, and that's, I mean, only when they wake up. I mean, the whole thing was a simulation from 100 years to 200 years later in a spaceship. It, like, everything that we've seen is completely meaningless because it was all a simulation.
But I think that's, well, so, and again, this is, I am being generous, because I think when we get to that ending and we know there's going to be a second season, that question of is that, you only think it's meaningless if you think that only the objective reality. Now. Well, no. If the show ends now, and if you follow the thought that like reality is objective, and that like the journey we went on with these characters is still in their minds, it still does matter.
Right. They were still affected by it.
They're still affected. So it's not wasted. That is a valid reality.
To the people who are asleep on a spaceship,
including Mora. Yeah. So I think that's the whole thing.
Didn't we also see another movie or something where everybody was asleep for like 100 years? Oh, Foundation. That was this was the Foundation too. A little right. Whatever.
I mean, it kind of reminds me of, I guess, it's more the Matrix.
Matrix, or like Ascension, if you want to do TV.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not unusual.
Or I think Assassin's Creed, maybe, maybe you know, but like, I don't know.
Anyway. I'm giving it,
too sci-fi.
But it only is sci-fi in the very last moments.
Right, but that you're saying sci-fi destroyed everything else before it. Not that what came before it was that great. I mean, it started out intriguing, but like by the sixth episode, it was like, oh, this is just a mess.
It gets a little slow, yeah. And there were some twists that don't quite work. I mean, I think I give it, and again, I am being overly generous, mostly because I love the creators, their previous series, Dark, which is also very philosophical. And so like that was looking at reality as a construct of events through time.
Right.
And this is looking at reality as perception. And so like they're both like the fact that there are these very deep philosophical cores that I think, you know, as the Westworld comparison holds weight, but I think that ultimately, I trust these guys. Don't you do it. I'm not done. You turn that duck off. I trust these guys to stick a landing, even if it might not be typically satisfying. I think there will be more thought-provoking stuff coming out of it than the kind of Westworld. It's very pretentious, but it ultimately is kind of shallow and doesn't work. Mm-hmm. I will say, I think where the two series differ and does make, I think, 1899, I think it technically executed 1899 is phenomenal. It was shot using volume technology, like on this, you know, soundstage with all the, you know, they literally made a show about a simulation in a simulation, like and all the international cast, everyone speaking, like the costumes, the set design, everything about it, I absolutely love. I do think that holding the reveal for the end puts it in they do a reverse season one of Dark, which is the first thing you find out about Dark in the first in the first episode, basically, is about the time travel. Like the kid gets lost and you discover that he went back in time. Mm-hmm. So now you know that this town has time holes and time travel is possible. But then the rest of the season progresses on how that sci-fi setup impacts the lives of these characters. Until the end of the first season where you find out, it impacted it so much that the kid that got lost in the beginning of the season is the main character's father. Like, went back in time. Like, main character saw the kid get lost and then finds out a couple of days later that that kid grew up to become his father, who then committed.
That show will break your brain, yes.
But it's great because the sci-fi stuff, they give it to you up front and then it's all about how it impacts the characters.
Right.
Whereas this one, it's front loading you with the characters and you're distracted the whole time because you're like, okay, but what is the mechanism? We know what is the thing. And so when they reveal it at the very end, it can't help but feel like a bit of a letdown. Right. And I do think
it renders it all moot, like the whole thing.
I don't think it does, but I do think that it really will depend on where it goes in the second season. Like, I think it has to come back and there will – hopefully the payoff makes it.
And you think – well, like Dark demanded a second – like I demanded a second season. I wanted to see one. This one I did not feel like – it doesn't need a second season. I mean, there will hopefully be a second season, but it could have – ended there and it's like, aha, it's like it was just like a simulation the whole time.
I didn't think that felt like it felt like season one of Fringe, where you've gone through this whole preamble and then in the last moments of the finale you realize, oh, the real show is something completely different and we're gonna get to that in season two.
Like
you're watching the prequel, but now we know what's actually happening.
Right. That kind of explains the year two feelings on this show, I feel like, really well.
Because I really like
it. Yeah. Well, the other thing it reminded me of in the way you described it was like the first season of Preacher, where – and this is more just for like people who read the graphic novel, where the first season was basically the prequel to where the graphic novel starts.
Right. You haven't gotten to the beginning of the story yet.
Yeah. Which is always, I don't know, it definitely does, I've only seen the first episode, obviously, and now, I mean, I'm still interested to watch it because I was enjoying it.
Really? But, because like you, everything that you saw on that ship doesn't matter.
No.
The characters were engaging, and I honestly was not like the twist, whatever twist was coming, which now I know, was not what was propelling me forward. Right. It was that like, oh, these characters are interesting. They all have compelling. They all have secrets, which I don't know, understand yet. But
those characters don't matter.
But here's the other thing. The characters matter. What I think will be cool is to see how much of that storyline, like what the truth that's underneath the setting, essentially, like how much of the core of who those people are outside of that time period, like how much of that holds. And we don't know for sure, like what if the future space is just another layer of a simulation? Like we don't know how... Like, basically what we know is that we can't trust anything.
Oh,
because it's all about perception.
What we found out is just another simulation of a simulation of a simulation.
Well, we don't know.
I know. And the thing is, and I really did not like the show, but I like Dark so much and I trust it so much that I will continue to watch because they might pull it out and like make, in the end, might be, oh.
And I think
right now I'm like,
Like I will say, I do not think the first season is as strong conceptually as Dark. Like I do think Dark, like it was much more gripping. But I'm into 1899 just because, like you're saying, I trust these guys because of Dark. And I just, I think I like, and what it ultimately was for Dark with me as well, which was like, you know, the end of Dark, I always struggled with like it. You know, was it a good or was it a cop-out ending? And I think that's what these guys do is even when you disagree, there's something compelling and thought-provoking. Like you want to keep unpacking it in your mind. And I think a lot of shows, like I just don't get that invested in. And so this one, the fact that like it's just a challenging show. Mm-hmm. And so even if I'm like not as enthralled with this season, I'm still kind of like, I don't know, man. Like, what if it's all going to pay off later? Or what's, you know, what is it? And the more I thought about it, the more I did appreciate the structure of it. Like, I actually, the full circleness of like me sitting there in the first episode thinking, like, oh, this is a very typical spaceship setup. And then finding out in the last moments of the last episode, oh, it's a fucking spaceship show. Like, it's, there's some really cool things about it.
Yeah.
Maybe I will be convinced by the second season. But right now, I just feel like...
There wasn't enough holes.
No, I know. I feel like they wrote themselves into a corner and then just tacked that ending. It's all a simulation onto the end because they didn't know where else to go. That's what it feels like to me.
They absolutely knew. I do think that is the one thing that they always knew because it is so much about... It is a show about... perception as reality. So I do think like the one thing that they probably knew the whole time was that it was going to be a simulation. I do think some of the stuff is not very precise. Like there's a lot of the
but when you,
and so you haven't gotten to this part, Dan, but like,
I would say when you approach a show knowing that the whole thing is a simulation, you can do whatever the hell you want and it doesn't matter. Because it's going to be a simulation.
All right. You're just going to keep saying it doesn't matter. And that's the whole point is that that's not true.
But the relationships.
How much of reality is what you think reality is the way your mind perceives reality versus what is actually out there. Like you and I would call the same color green because we have a language to we have learned that what, you know, that is what that color is labeled, but I have no way of knowing that the color I see when I say green is the actual color that you see when you say green. Right. We could be looking at two completely different colors, but because we've learned to label them the same, we've constructed a more or less objective reality out of unknowably disparate subjective perceptions.
Dustin, you're enjoying a show that is about this kind of different perspectives in Fleischman Is in Trouble, which They teed up in that first episode with the
relatively. I can see that. I can, so,
but because it's not,
because it's packaged in a Upper East Side New York divorce drama.
Yeah. One thing I did want to say though, the other thing that they do that this is one thing where I do agree with you. I don't think it's necessarily constructed as precisely as I would have wanted. One of the things that the season does, there are these rooms that are accessible through hatches that underneath the characters' beds, and they lead to memories. And it's kind of
that was the thing. The memories, you're like, okay, this is what you're trying to unpack, was these memories, and like
of you think lives. That's the point,
exactly. And then it turns out,
but then by the end, it's actually about the way that you can skip from memory to memory, because, and which is also like they were trying to essentially create the structure of the brain and the way that different stimuli will trigger different memories. And so you're creating these pathways. It's almost like the whole simulation of the ship and everything was not modeled on any person's brain, but kind of was connected and operated in a similar to a brain. But then they added another level, which is that, so the Daniel character, who's the husband, obviously, it's a simulation, so it's all code. So the way the code is visually represented in the simulation is as like a steampunk motherboard and like a bunch of wires and pipes like behind the hull. So there's one level in which, so it's like even the code is represented as sort of a brain-ish thing. So they're deconstructing the ship as they move through it. But moving through it in ways that are almost like a brain, but it's just kind of, it doesn't quite work. There's too many things that are trying to, like, I appreciate what they're trying to do with the visual representations, but it's not quite precise enough to like gel into something that felt meaningful. That just kind of did look cool. And I'm kind of like,
but also you have like memories of a woman being sexually assaulted by like an Amish dude who was pissed off because her gay brother made a pass in 1899. A lot of things that happened in 1899 that would be acceptable in 2099, but weren't 200 years ago. And I don't know. I don't understand why.
Well, so that's part of it is I think that's what's going to be interesting. Why would that be
part of the unconscious or subconscious guilt or shame or whatever right. the hell is going on.
Were those memories completely fabricated, or did they represent something that would be meaningful to the actual characters? Like the people who are on the spaceship. That's the thing. We do not know how the people other than Mora ended up in this simulation. We don't know anything about why, like if they were prisoners, if they volunteered, whatever. So we got used to seeing these characters in the context of their immigrants who are running from something painful in their past and right. going to a new world. But that alone, that could still be what they're doing. And those memories, maybe like they may not have specifically like that family dynamic that happened to that character in 1899. Obviously that did not literally happen, but maybe she was attacked. And maybe her family did not support her in 2099. And this becomes the representation of that real emotion, but a simulation of like what it could have been like at that time. Like, we don't know. And that's what I am fascinated about next season, is we're going to find out who these people, what we think we, how much of what we know about them in this made up 1899 scenario, how much of that is real to them. Because ultimately, I think that's the point. If even though it was a simulation, that is who they are.
Well, the other analogy was like it was Manifest in Westworld and then Eternal Sunshine, where they're like trying somebody they wanted to bury their memories of something, right. And that's exactly what Eternal Sunshine was about. But I just don't know how that works when you set it in 2099.
I don't know why it wouldn't. So
all of these memories that you're trying to bury were in 1899.
But again, that might just be the representation of that memory. Like, I think you're getting a little so literal. Like, So I can, so, you know, okay, in dreams, right? Where, you know, it's a Freudian. It's like, okay, you dreamt about a knife, or you dreamt about whatever, and it actually means your mother. You know, like there's always like the symbol that you see represents something else. There's no reason that like what they took something that was a real painful memory to these people and then found a way to translate it into symbolism that symbolism that mattered at that time period to fit, or were they at, or is it a part of a whole brain experiment where they're giving painful memories to these people to see what it does to them? That could be part of the simulation. How much does our perception, like they think this is real? Because the other thing, one thing that happens with Mora is when she finds out that she supposedly has this husband and child and sees the photos, and she keeps going, I don't remember them. I don't feel anything. Whereas like her husband like keeps thinking, no, like as soon as she, once she understands that this is real, she will feel it. And it never happens. To the very end of the episode, to the very end of the show, right. She's like reaching out, you know, she's willing to help the kid and everything. But it's like, I look at these photos and I don't feel anything. Now that's part of why I'm like, they really aren't her husband or child. Like maybe that's a whole other level of the deception. Or maybe it's proving that no, like reality is perception. And the minute you remove those memories, like that no longer exists for her.
Well, that's just very upsetting and depressing.
So that's why I'm interested. Because I'm like, okay, well, now it just got this whole layer of meaning. It's not about the mystery. It's about what all of this adds up to for these characters that I've come to care about. And I want to know where they're taking it.
No, yeah. I hear you. And I am curious about where they're going to go. I don't know if Netflix will renew it. Because I feel like a lot of people are going to be very frustrated by that first season.
Well, it's at the top of the charts, I think, so far. So we'll see. But anyway, we've gone well over.
It's probably cheaply made. So, I mean, not relatively cheaply made compared to whatever.
Watch the making of documentary, because I think part of the way it ended up being cheap is because of the pandemic. Like they did it all on that. Yeah.
All right, I'll watch that.
Anyway, I wouldn't say I do agree. I don't think it was as great as I was hoping for, but I'm glad it's given me a lot of things to like ponder and pick over, and I will be hoping eagerly that it gets renewed.
Well, I had nothing to pick over and ponder until I talked to you, so maybe I agree as well.
How are we going to do this review?
I don't know.
Is it just going to be written from me trying to get you, convince you?
Maybe.
to reappreciate. I'm going to try to convince you to watch the season again. Like, why don't you invest?
What?
9 more hours.
Wait, Dustin, did you watch it at like a faster speed? Is that what happened?
Oh, did you?
I did slow it down a little bit because it was in another language. The problem with this show is like I was captivated the entire time, but it moved so slowly that
the first half especially was a little slow.
It really like I fell asleep a lot, and like would have to like wake up and then back up, and it wasn't because it was bad. It was just sort of like lulled me into sleep.
Right.
Wow, we're really. Really convincing people to watch this show.
Well, I mean the problem is also that like hopefully I worry if they've listened to all of this and if they are propelled by twists, then like we've ruined the twist for them. So
well, we'll just have to put a big spoiler warning in the notes.
Yeah,
I'm sure. And I would say that I fell asleep because there's a certain dreamlike quality to the show, not because of the show at all. It just had this very.
So it's almost like they were providing you with a tone that was appropriate to what the show ended up being,
which is a simulation.
Fair enough. Yes,
it's almost like the show is really well constructed.
No, it would be interesting, and I think actually people that are listening and haven't seen it should watch it knowing – I'm interested to know what they would think, knowing that it's a simulation going in. I don't want to watch it again to find out.
But tell us in the comments.
But I am actually interested in what people would think of the show if you knew what it was as you were watching it.
Do our work for us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I could do that because I've only seen the first episode. So.
There you go. Yeah. Tell us what you think, Dan.
I'll get to it at some point.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. So, Dan, are you more or less interested in continuing?
I think I'm more. I think I'm, I mean, it doesn't push me too much one way or the other, I think, but yeah. I'm intrigued to understand, like, I'm intrigued to kind of like watch it with that eye of being like, oh, what does this mean?
Yeah.
Like in the real world, if that's the real world, because
yeah.
It might not be.
But we don't know. Who's to say?
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, that's the podcast.
That's Podjiba.
We will be back next week, right?
Yes.
Yeah. We'll be back next week. Will it be December? No. Almost be December. But we're
almost done with November.
Rapidly getting to the end of 2022.
I don't know what we're going to talk about next week. Because it's
We'll talk about the Andor finale.
Yeah. For sure.
The Andor.
And nothing else. There's
Fleischman again. I think something debuted tomorrow for some reason.
Well, we didn't talk about Dead to Me, which premiered this week.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have seen some of that.
There's Mythic Quest is still on.
Mm-hmm. And Yellowstone.
Yeah.
And Tulsa King. I really want to talk about Tulsa King.
We talked about it last week.
Yeah.
Okay, but Tulsa King has become funnier and funnier. It's just like a bad funny show.
Right. Speaking of bad, Big Sky. This week's the most recent Big Sky. Oh my god, it's getting good, guys.
In a bad way. I don't remember what happened this week.
I mean, it's just like still not a great show, but it's great.
I mean,
it's such a guilty pleasure. No, because they finally figured out like Walt gets captured, but then the girl Paige runs away, and they're zeroing in on Reba McEntire and her husband. And
yeah.
Jensen got his ex-wife and her husband to like kind of be on the outs because he like revealed that the husband was
Jensen's ex-wife. Dan is from Enlisted.
Angelique Cabral.
Yes. Okay. He's fantastic.
Yeah. She's good.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, we'll talk about all of those next week, maybe, or some of them. I don't know. Whatever. It's whatever we want to talk about. Wood talk.
Damn right. Wood talk.
Water and wood. Have a good night.
Have a good night. Good night.
Enjoy your Thanksgivings.
Oh, yeah.
Bye. Eat pie.